This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You may have seen headlines about chatbots and neural networks, things like ChatGPT. Now they're getting closer to being parts of our everyday lives. Just last week, both Microsoft and Google announced plans to incorporate these kind of chatbots into their search engines so that you can have at least what looks like a conversation with a so-called artificial intelligence chatbot instead of just that list of results you usually get. But these machine-generated conversations are developing a bit of a reputation for producing inaccurate results and some seemingly bizarre behavior. Part of the story is the way language itself works. Gary Lupien is a cognitive scientist and professor of psychology at UW-Madison. Gary, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
These chatbot programs, can you talk a little bit about the way they work, the large language models that they're trained in?
Sure, yeah. I think we're in for quite a ride in this next few years, and it's been fascinating to watch. I studied neural networks in the early 2000s when I was in grad school, and you know, they were scientifically very interesting, but really worked on just toy models, toy data sets. And now with much more powerful computers and the ability to train them on much, much more data, they're all grown up. And so essentially they are trained by feeding them, these language models are trained by feeding them large amounts of language scraped from the internet, from different sources. And they try to predict words given other words. And so it's a very, very simple procedure. But what's incredible is that this simple task that they are being asked to do produces all kinds of unexpected outcomes. So in just trying to predict the surrounding words, they end up learning all kinds of things, not just single facts, but concepts and how to combine them in novel ways. So that's when people say, oh, they're just predicting words, strictly speaking, that's true. But in the course of doing that, they end up learning a whole lot more.
Let's talk about learning, what we mean by that phrase. My feeling is that if I went and looked at a bunch of data and tried to talk about it, I don't know, something different is going on in my brain versus this neural network and it predicting and combining these ideas.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like we're doing anything of the sort. It doesn't feel like we're predicting in this way. But actually, there's lots of evidence that we are. So if you are listening to a musical melody and a note is off, you realize that something is wrong because you were predicting one thing and you got something else. And the same thing happens in language. If someone uses the wrong word, you notice because you were, in fact, making a prediction. And so we're running these kinds of, as people, we're doing a lot of the same kind of thing, even though it's not our goal to predict. We're not actively trying to predict what someone is about to say. In the background, that's kind of what we're doing. And so we also learn in other ways, but that way of predictive learning is an important component of human learning as well.
Now, you've, I understand, engaged some with ChatGPT. What kind of things have you tried? What have your experiences been like?
What kinds of things? Well, one thing I've tried is giving it questions for my exams. And I was kind of blown away because the more the question tapped into kind of critical thinking and synthesis, the better it seemed to do. And the questions that it was getting wrong were probably ones that were not as good. They were asking about more isolated facts, about more kind of specific details. So that was one surprise. The other one was just having it write outlines and give perspectives from, you know, what would this scientist think about this idea? And, you know, it's giving not incredibly deep responses, but kind of on point. You know, certainly better than what I would expect from a lot of undergrad students and maybe even some grad students. So I was impressed.
Now, in Google's presentation last week, their AI chatbot called Bard, at a bad moment for them, made simple mistake about astronomy. What is happening there when these chatbots try to reach into their learning and get it wrong?
Yeah, I think what's happening is in some ways, similar to what happens with people. We get facts wrong all the time. And, you know, we forget, we confuse one thing for another. And that's what we're seeing here. So you wouldn't expect that from a, you know, you wouldn't expect a calculator to get an arithmetic problem wrong, but people get arithmetic problems wrong all the time. And so do these kinds of models. They approximate. We wouldn't expect them actually to be very factually accurate. And so if the task is real factual accuracy, we should lower our expectations. If the task, though, is, you know, combine some things, organize some knowledge, you know, bounce around some idea, a lot of the kinds of things that we engage with people about, that's where they seem to shine much more than a lot of us had any reason to believe. And so a lot of what we do with search engines, with it's not about looking up facts. It's about trying to. So, for example, when I gave my exams as open book exams and allowed students to use Google, use whatever, their grades didn't go up. They couldn't Google the answers. But plugging in these questions into ChatGPT is giving them sort of often correct answers. So it's able to synthesize knowledge. But if you ask about a specific fact, you should expect that it might not get it right.
Talking to Gary Loupian, cognitive scientist and professor of psychology at UW-Madison, looking at the latest efforts in neural networks, chatbots. And Gary, that doesn't make sense to me. If I can't get the basic facts right, how can I synthesize it? Aren't I building things on a shaky foundation, whether I am, you know, me, Rob Ferret, or a chatbot?
Well, it depends what kind of answer you're looking for. So if what you want is, for example, you're asking about the ways that two short stories are similar and dissimilar. There are some ways to get that totally wrong, but there are many ways of getting it kind of right, because it's not really a fact-based question. It's kind of a opinion. You know, it's much more open-ended. Whereas if you are asking about the features of a vacuum cleaner, which I think was the Bard, the Google, and a factual error, well, you know, that vacuum cleaner has a certain list of features. But those are the things that you can easily look up using traditional search engines. And that's not really where you would need to use these much more powerful tools.
Now, Gary, I want to ask you about potential practical applications, and then get into some of what this could tell us about our own ways of thinking. First of all, we're still early days here. What do you see potentially as the most useful application of these kind of chatbots?
I think in the immediate future, the most practical application is going to be in coding and programming. Again, something that most of us really didn't see coming, but part of the training set for these models is computer code. And there are now lots of demonstrations how you can ask it to code, you know, simple programs just using English as a prompt, and it does it. And often it needs to be fixed a little bit, but a lot of what coders have to do is go from, you know, that kind of high-level goal to code. And if you can do those initial steps automatically, that's probably going to shift what a lot of coders are doing day to day. So they'll still have jobs, but those jobs might be changing quite dramatically.
Now, as a cognitive scientist, you don't just wonder about how computers think, but about how people think. Are there lessons you're hoping to bounce back and forth with as we look at these neural networks and then back at our brains and back and forth?
Absolutely, absolutely. So what's amazing about these language models is their input is just language, and yet they learn, for example, a lot about what things look like. And if we look at, for example, people who are born blind, they too know quite a bit about what things look like and how the visual world works. And so this shows us kind of really in very dramatic ways, all those things that are embedded in language that we might have thought you actually needed to experience firsthand, but actually it might be possible to learn from language itself, so that it's a much richer repository of knowledge. The flip side of that is all the biases. So, you know, these models, there are sort of guardrails in place to keep them from spouting all sorts of biased things, but they are learning all kinds of biases, stereotypes, and that too is embedded in language. And so it raises this question of to what extent are we also learning a lot of these biases from language itself?
And finally, Gary, people have a lot of concerns about, well, are students going to, in effect, cheat by using these kind of programs to write their essays or college entry exams or essays or what have you? Are we going to have the internet clogged with sort of shaky chatbot-based arguments? Do you have concerns about particular negative consequences of the use of these?
Yeah, I think there is good reason to worry about this. I think assessments are going to have to change in some ways in response. It's not totally clear how. If we're using multiple choice questions and students can just, if they're taking it online and they can just paste in these questions and get the right answer, that's clearly problematic. In many cases, I think we'll learn to use them to allow for better learning. So, for example, in teaching students to code, a lot of the early things that are very frustrating to students are these little syntactic kind of errors that keep their programs from running. And it's just they're spending a lot of time just getting through it, and it's kind of a big barrier to entry. And if they could start by having these kinds of chatbots generate code for them, and then they get to play with them. In some cases, ask them, why does this work? The chatbot might not give an answer that's better than the professor's answer, but in the absence of being able, to have a personal conversation for each student with the professor, this could be the next best thing. So to kind of have this conversation and learn from it. The same with language. Why is this paragraph a more effective way of conveying this idea than that paragraph? And when you ask it, you often get quite reasonable responses that you as a student can learn from.
Gary, thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's Gary Lupien, a cognitive scientist, professor of psychology at UW-Madison, with us today to look at the machine learning chatbot programs you may have seen in the news lately that are quickly becoming part of our online experience, including at some big search engines.